call the House Committee on Government Accountability and Information Technology for Tuesday, May 1st, 2007 to order. And I'm going to open a public hearing on two bills at the same time, Senate Bill 70A and Senate Bill 72. Good morning, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. The two bills that that we've brought before you today are, I hope, fairly straightforward bills. They prove to be on the other side, and I'm hoping they prove to be equally as straightforward on this side.
Could you introduce yourself?
I'm sorry, for the record, Chuck Hibner, Director of the Audits Division.
Thank you.
Senate Bill 70, which does have an amendment, was actually a carry forward from last legislative session. The work that went into this bill was a product of a subcommittee of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. In 2003-05, the interim, we put together a group that included LFO and a couple of the legislators so that we could get to some of the legislation that maybe doesn't make as much sense now as it maybe did prior. I do have some written testimony. Hopefully that is somewhat self-explanatory, but I will go to the back that talks about what the modifications are. Firstly, the change of director audit reviews. There is a statute where when an agency head leaves an agency, we are required to do a review. We had asked that this be removed entirely because we do our audits based on risk. And if we felt we needed to do an audit of an agency head and the risk was such, we would do that, whether or not there was a statute that mandated us to do this, to have the arbitrary trigger of an agency head leaving. And some of these agencies where we spend a lot of time anyway seem like, in many cases, just extra work. And we do spend a significant amount of time over the last few bienniums just meeting that requirement without really getting a significant amount of bang for the buck. After discussion in the committee this year, this on the Senate side, they were a little bit hesitant to back off that far to totally remove it. So we came up with some language, which you see the amended language, that would still require us to do a change of director in instances where we haven't spent time recently in an agency or where we have an outstanding hotline complaint directly related to the director, which makes sense. Those would be the sort of things that would trigger our risk barometer anyway, so we certainly don't have any problem with those amendments. But again, to do the change of directors just based on kind of the arbitrary someone retiring, especially when we're in these agencies all the time, many of them anyway, seems somewhat inefficient, and we were hoping to get that language changed. And we are certainly happy with what's coming to you now. Also, we had in that bill changing the requirements for semi-independent boards and commissions. Currently, they're required to have an audit performed, and we help them contract with outside private sector firms to do that. That can be a fairly expensive undertaking, especially for these small commissions, which don't have a whole lot of budget anyway. And really what our experience has been, they may actually have a work product that actually serves a little better, maybe not quite as costly. If they were to have a review of, say, revenues and expenditures and provided a report, and the auditor provided a report, which would be a less costly undertaking, and provide probably the information that the folks, the LFO and others, would like to see. That we could still require the audit in those instances where we felt they still should have an opinion on their financial statements, but it would also give the flexibility where it seems to make more sense just to have a review to do that. So that would be the reason for that. And then the final bit, Section 3, where we're trying to clean up some old mandates that don't make sense. There is a requirement in law that whenever a sheriff provides services to the state and is paid for the services, we're supposed to do an audit. We never have. I don't think many of us even knew it existed. So to get that out of there just made some sense. There's also a requirement that we do an audit of a revolving fund of the Department of Veterans Affairs. Again, at some time that might have made some sense to do. We do it regularly. It's not significant enough to even make materiality levels for us, and we do it and really don't find anything anyway. So we'd like to have that one eliminated. And that would be the extent of the bill. And move on to Bill 72.
Please.
This bill, we're hoping, provides some more definition to the loss of funds statute. Whenever there's a loss of funds in a state agency, they're required to report that to us. Several provisions here. One, we're trying to make a little more, as you see in one, we're trying to provide more definition to who is subject to this requirement by changing the definition of what a public official is to match more closely with what government standards and practices does. It seems to be a more practical definition, so it maybe makes it a little more clear who it is we're trying to track. It also establishes a dollar threshold. There isn't a dollar threshold. $100 can be seen as somewhat arbitrary, but you got to pick a number, and that seems to be a good number to start at. Right now, there is no threshold. Agencies are kind of establishing their own threshold. There are instances where we go into an agency and ask if they've had any losses, and it'll be several thousand dollars. To some agencies, that's insignificant. To others, it's significant, or they're even reporting $25 losses to us. So that we're hoping to at least establish a threshold. $100 seems reasonable. And then establishing the timeline for them having to report to us when a loss has been sustained, 30 days. There is, again, no definition as to when. And it just sets a time limit. If you discover the loss, 3 days later it has to be reported to us on the outside. And then we are also setting a requirement for ourselves that we have to make a determination within 30 days whether we're going to investigate or not. The way the wording is of the statute, it makes it a little unclear as to whether we're supposed to actually complete the investigation, which if it's a serious loss of funds or a fraud or something of that nature, there aren't many investigations you complete in 30 days. We have to make a determination whether we're going to investigate and get that on record, but certainly the investigation may go much longer than that. And again, that's the emphasis of those two bills. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Seeing none. Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on both Senate bills 70 and 72, and I am going to open a work session on Senate bill 70A.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 78 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Girard moves Senate Bill 70A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Call roll.
Representative
Blair? Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative
Parker?
Aye.
Chair Riley?
Aye. Having received the majority vote, it's sent to the floor. Should we put this on the consent calendar?
I don't want to carry it. So
consent calendar. And I'm going to...
I thought you could move that after the pass.
I think we can assume it. It was part of your motion.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 70A and open a work session on Senate Bill 72.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 72 to the floor of the due pass recommendation and be placed on a consent account.
Representative Girard moves Senate Bill 72 to the floor of the due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent calendar. Any discussion? Call roll.
Representative Breyer?
Aye.
Representative
Edwards? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Having received the required votes, Senate Bill 72 is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation and placed on the consent calendar. I'm going to open a public hearing on two more bills at the same time, Senate Bill 166 and Senate Bill 168. And who do we have to talk about those?
Ready for about real estate agencies here.
Real estate agency, would you come forward, please?
Good afternoon. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Laurie Skillman. I'm the land development manager for the State of Oregon Real Estate Agency. I also work on legislation and administrative rules, and I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 166 and 168. Prior to doing so, however, I would like to introduce someone in our audience. Gene Bentley, members of the committee, the governor appointed Gene Bentley to the position of commissioner for the real estate agency late last Friday. Pending Senate confirmation, he'll be our new commissioner, and he's here, not in his official capacity yet, as you know, but just to observe and to say good afternoon to all of you.
Congratulations, Mr. Bentley, and welcome.
We're delighted. Let me start with Senate Bill 166. Senate Bill 166 is an agency bill. The it's a housekeeping bill, and it amends a section in our statutes in Chapter 696 relating to clients' trust accounts. Last session in 2005, there was a House Bill 2604 that directed the agency to write administrative rules covering clients' trust accounts and to write a rule covering disputed funds in clients' trust accounts. Inadvertently, the way that the bill was written, it took in clients' trust accounts not only for real estate brokers, but also for real estate property managers, because the definition of real estate licensee encompasses both. Mm-hmm. When we began writing the rules, we realized this, the property management rules working group and the Oregon Association of Realtors agreed that we needed to have a statutory change for this to exclude property managers from this provision in the statute, and that's what the statute does. It does two things. One, it excludes property managers from this rulemaking, and it makes the procedures for managing these disputed funds and clients' trust accounts an optional procedure for brokers, and it really applies to sales transactions, which is what the original intent of the bill was. And I'm happy to answer any questions about that particular.
Richard Gerard.
I see me asking. Patrick, was there any opposition to these bills in the Senate?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Representative Gerard, Senate Bill 166 was passed by the Senate through the Senate by a vote of 25-1. The Senate Bill 168 was 26-0. Senator Whitsitt with the no vote.
Any other questions on 166? We'll go ahead with 168.
Very good. Mr. Chair, again, my name's Laurie. For the record, my name's still Laurie Skillman, representing the Real Estate Agency. Senate Bill 168 is a kind of housekeeping bill. The Real Estate Agency licenses escrow agents, and the way that the statute is written is that there's no provision for late renewal of that license. So on date of expiration, if someone is 1 day, 2 days, or 10 days late, there's no provision to allow for any kind of renewal. Consequently, they would have to start over on the entire process of becoming licensed. All our other licensees have provisions for late renewals. Escrow doesn't. We wanted to clean up the statute for that purpose.
Questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Very good, and I provided written testimony for you. Thank you.
Okay. I'll go to work session. I think Thatcher should
have walked
out.
I'm going to first close the public hearing on Senate Bill 166 and 168. Standees for.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 166 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and be placed on the consent calendar.
That Representative Gerard moves Senate Bill 166 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and then be placed on the consent calendar. Any discussion? Call roll.
Representative
Barnes? Aye.
Representative
Gerard? Aye.
Representative
Excused. Aye. Having received the required votes, Senate Bill 166 is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation and placed on the consent calendar. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 166. To open a work session on Senate Bill 168.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 168 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and be placed on the consent calendar.
Representative Gerard moves Senate Bill 168 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and be placed on the consent calendar. Discussion. Call roll.
Aye.
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 Excused. Aye. Having received the required votes, Senate Bill 168 is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation and placed on the consent calendar. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 168, and I'm going to close this session of the committee. Thank you all very much.